The We Are SC podcast for September 30th. Gary Pasquis joined, as always, by Jeremy Hogue and Mike Lamb. And guys, let's give a quick thought on the game that we saw last Saturday, the Trojans beating the Oregon State Beavers 35-10. It was an interesting football game. I really think you can almost look at it as a tale of two halves. The first half, and then the second half, the Trojans really came back and kind of put the game away to get the ending margin. Jeremy, why don't you start us off and just give us your quick thoughts?
I thought it was a great game if you didn't watch it. If you just showed up and saw the score at the end of the day, and it was 35-10, coming off of the bye week, you know, you play Oregon State, it's a pretty good team. Your defense obviously played well, holding them to 10 points, and, you know, 7 of those points came on a kick return. You score 35, everything's good. But if you actually watch that game, I mean, that was ugly. That was, it was painful to sit through. I mean, I hate to say it, but it was boring to watch, you know, the penalties, the injury timeouts, the lack of rhythm that either team seemed to have. I mean, USC's defense, you got to take your hat off to them, played well. Sua Cravens was unbelievable. Definitely the difference in the game and sort of keeping USC ahead in the first, you know, 2.5 quarters. But man, it was not an exciting game to watch. There was not a lot of execution on either side of the ball. It was just inconsistency for the Trojan team, especially on offense, and you know, something they've got to get cleaned up. So at the end of the day, you're happy with the score, you're happy with the result, but coming out of a bye week, coming off of a loss, you would have thought they would have been a lot sharper than they were. And, you know, this team, it just reminds you this team is still a young team and is still very much a work in progress. But, you know, ended the game well, as you said, Gary, and, you know, definitely some positives to build on.
It's really a work in progress on the offensive side of the football. And if you want to break it down into the two halves, if you don't have the pick six and you don't have the Hail Mary, how much are you scratching your head at halftime? And I don't know if that really changed the complexion of the way that the Trojans would approach the second half of it. But it, when you talk about a work in progress, I'm really concerned about this offensive line. And, Jeremy, I don't remember, I don't think you started as a freshman. I didn't start as a freshman, and I am really not down with the freshman guard experiment. I don't think it's working. I think there's a lot of concerns there with what's going on the running game. I'm seeing, you know, both guys, and Toa, and I'm seeing Damian both going the wrong way. That means they missed their block, and they're chasing whoever was supposed to be the person they were supposed to block. And then on the flip side, in pass protection, I'm seeing those guys get beat inside and lunging and doing some things. And quite frankly, I see Cody Kessler at some spots looking like he's afraid to step into the up in the pocket, and he can't throw the ball effectively that way because he seems like he's concerned about pressure up the middle. So defensively, fine. When you talk about a work in progress on offense, I'm just very, very concerned with what I'm seeing right now.
Well, let's talk about a couple personnel moves, though. If we're going to be on the offensive line, let's go ahead and hit that really quick. We saw Vianney Talamaival move ahead of Damian in the starting lineup at right guard, and then what I thought was real interesting, Andre Walker, number 70, what was in the game a little bit in the second half as the reserve right tackle, I saw two very nice blocks from him. And so what do you guys think about, though, you know, get Vianney in there, but really Andre Walker as another big body in there on that line, in that rotation?
Let's talk Vianney first. So that would be a third freshman that we put in at right guard, right? Does
right.
that make you happy, Mike?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
It, no.
To me, it's the same problem, is that we just do not have the bodies at guard with any experience really put in the game. And those three guys, they seem to be rotating through there to try to find an answer. And it's just incredibly inconsistent right now. And it's hard to expect more than that, but that's sort of who we are. I will tell you from an Andre Walker standpoint, I couldn't have been more pleased. I mean, Gary, you and I have talked about it for a couple of years. When he plays well and gets his body going, he's got such good feet. He's a great athlete for the size of a guy he is. You know, he dominates people. And, you know, there were times last year I thought he was absolutely the best lineman on our team. It's just a matter of is he always doing the right things, and is he consistent, and can he get himself to where he's not sort of plagued by these injuries. And he's, you know, from what we're hearing, and again, I'm not there every day, but what we're hearing is he may be past all those issues and be ready to really play. And if so, there's a guy to me that could really, really contribute. And as much as they've got him rotated in at right tackle, that guy's played guard as well. To me, there's no reason you can't, as you get a little further into the season, start thinking about, going back to Mike's point at the very beginning of the season, who are your best five guys you can put on the field? And to me, to think that a healthy Andre Walker isn't one of those guys, probably not correct. I mean, to me, I think he is one of those top five guys, and he's got more experience. He's played against in more big games. He's played against more big-time players. I think he brings an added element to the offensive line that was sorely lacking in the first couple of weeks.
Well, just Michael, I'll throw it out to you really quick. Sorry to interrupt. But why is that not happening so far? Is it a case of the coaches want to get a comfort level and understand that, hey, okay, Andre, we're not just going to hand this to you. We're going to make you work for it. But I agree with Jeremy. I was sitting there in the second half going, you know, Andre at right guard, boy, that would seem to make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, it would make a lot of sense. And I was really interested in Andre's comments after the game. He seemed very contrite, almost apologetic about,
yes,
you know, the fact that maybe the injury lingered too long, and Steve Sarkisian clearly was playing psychologist with him, saying that, you know, you're over this, you've got to be mentally tough, and you've got to get through this. So there was something that they were trying to do. I remember this happened to me when I was a young player in high school. I had a coach, you know, kind of got in my head a little bit, like, look, you've got to get over this. And that's what a good coach does, is push you through barriers, or a barrier that you don't think that you can get through. He is needed. The team needs him. I also love his comments. He says, hey, I'll play wherever the team needs me. And there's two things going there. One, sounds like you're a team player. Two, you just want to get back in the games and play again.
That's nice to hear from that guy there. Let me throw a quick reader question out to you guys. USCPA on the message board, and I sent you guys this question last week, and just want to get your thoughts on the splits right now on the offensive line. He had some concerns about it. You saw what he wrote. Do you agree? Do you disagree? What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, I'll be honest with you. Splits is a philosophy and a philosophical thing that a lot of line coaches get into. And, you know, they may want to spread you out to try to create some running lanes and space. They may want to keep everybody in tight so that you sort of can't let people squeeze through. At the end of the day, if your guys are playing as a unit and you're playing assignment football, it's not like I see us with 6-inch splits up there, and it's not like I see us with 3-foot splits up there. I don't see it being that dramatic of a thing, with all due respect. You know, to me, it's just a matter of, are these guys playing together and playing assignment football? We're seeing way too many missed assignments where guys are, you can almost see it in the replay, where the light bulb goes off in their head a half second too late when a guy just went by them. You know, oh my gosh, I was supposed to peel off and get that guy. And, you know, that doesn't get corrected no matter what the splits are. If you aren't on the same page communicating as a unit and making sure you got a hat on a hat, you know, that's going to happen regardless.
I don't think it's splits. I think it's guys that aren't ready to play that are being thrust in there. And that's why I think that this discussion we're having right now is probably the most germane one to the offense for Steve Sarkisian and what they're trying to do here. It's not splits. It's some personnel that just aren't ready, whether it's physically, mentally, or whatever. And that's not a slight on anybody. If you're a 17, 18-year-old, year old and you're a freshman at a university, again, I go back to the point. Jeremy, I don't think you started as a freshman, and it's a tough thing to do, and probably the toughest position to do it in college football.
Yeah, when you start to look at the history of USC football, you can count on one hand the number of true freshmen who started as offensive linemen. Well, that pretty much says something right there. Okay, so what worked in the third quarter? When the Trojans came out and ran the ball 18 times in the third quarter for 81 yards and really got it going, it was as much Justin Davis that and it was Buck Allen. I thought that was the best we've seen from him since his injury last year, and you can see how that can really really be a good combination between the two of them, and it seemed like they were getting the ball off tackle a little bit more once the third quarter things got going.
I think they made some adjustments. I mean, you got to give some credit to Oregon State's defense. I think, you know, we're so used to saying, hey, Mike Riley, Oregon State offense is awesome. You know, Oregon State and Mike Riley have put some pretty dang good defenses on the field, and this seems to be a pretty good defense that they've got right now up there. And they came at us and threw some stuff at us that clearly was stuffing the run game early in the game and creating some pressure and other things, and we adjusted to it. And, you know, we didn't see a lot of adjustments in the Boston College college game in the second half, almost like, you know, we thought we could just keep doing what we were doing. I think the guys made some adjustments. The play calling was different. Where we were hitting the holes was different. And all of a sudden we were getting guys blocked. That's all it really takes against a good team like that. But when you get the talent that we have and you get guys blocked and you're blocking for a Buck Allen or a Justin Davis, those guys are going to get yards. They're going to get big yards. And it was nice to see us start to wear those people down and get our defense off the field.
I'm not a big fan of the whole play calling thing, but in the first half, there were a lot of second and tens, third and eights. There was just not the commitment to running the ball on first down, and I saw that in the second half. So if you want to call that an adjustment or whatever it is, I thought that set up the running game a little bit better, because when you're second and seven and second and six, it's a little bit easier to keep trying to run the football, and that's what I saw from the Trojan offense.
And you speak of adjustments. I thought, if you're going to flip over to the other side of the ball, I thought this was a good game for the way the Trojans came out in the second half. Because if you look at defensively, they did a pretty good job against Sean Mannion in the second half. 4 of 13 for 16 yards. Mannion's a good quarterback. And they kind of shut things down. I'm going to give more and more credit to Adoree Jackson and the impact he is having on that secondary. Mike, you mentioned the two big plays in the first half, the Sua Cravens pick six and obviously the Hail Mary. I'm going to say Adoree's tip in the end zone that eventually Leon McQuay intercepted, I'm going to throw that in there as a third big play that was pretty critical.
Adoree Jackson he's just really starting to – you can see him get the feel. He's got it. I mean, you know, we talked about it after the Stanford game. You know, you cover one of the best players, if not the best, you know, player in the Pac-12, and you're able to handle that. He's starting to get his level of comfort as he's playing more and more. And I think he's going to be a critical component of this. And if I'm Justin Wilcox, I'm thinking, well, you know, I've got this side of the field, or I've got this quarter covered pretty much. I don't have to worry about that. I can start to do some things. And if you do that, I think that you can go ahead and start to do a little more experimentation with Sua Cravens. You would be shocked, and I'm going to do both sides of the football. If you have a really good left tackle, you'd be shocked how much easier your life becomes as an offensive coordinator. If you've got a really good corner that you can count on, you'd be shocked how much easier and much more creative you can become as a defensive coordinator.
Now, one of the things that I saw on defense, and I know, Gary, you and I connected at halftime and talked a little bit about it, was, you know, coming out of that Boston College game where, you know, our linebackers just did not play well at all, especially on the outside. You know, all of a sudden, Scott Felix is not in the game, and Sua Cravens is up there at linebacker, and he spent almost the entire game there, and he was coming with pressure several times, made some huge plays, you know, in the backfield, as well as, you know, when he does drop in coverage, all of a sudden he's on a tight end, and they're not used to seeing a guy break on the ball, you know, on a tight end out pattern like Sua did and takes it for a pick six. You know, I think the coaches are not only thinking about Oregon State as much as they were, but they've got to be thinking about, okay, what's coming ahead for these Trojans? What are we going to face? We're going to face more spread teams like Boston College, like Arizona State this weekend, like Arizona the week after, like eventually UCLA, that are going to spread us out, do a lot, give us a lot of different things, and we've got to have guys that play better in space and get, you know, having Sua be able to move up and play that linebacker role while he's not a true linebacker, and I doubt he will be in the NFL, you know, that just gives us so much more flexibility to do things defensively. And it certainly worked against Oregon State. Now, whether it works against these more spread option teams, I mean, that to me is still what we have to prove to ourselves and prove to everybody else.
Well, let's flip over to talking about that right now with ASU. They got it handed to them by UCLA, I think, you know, last week, but to me, while the Bruins did look good, I'll tip the hat to them. That script could have easily been flipped. There was two quarterback injuries going into that game. One played, one didn't. If Taylor Kelly plays and Jerry Neuheisel plays for UCLA, you know, who knows what that game is going to be. So credit UCLA, but a very timely situation for their quarterback to be there in Arizona State. No matter which quarterback is there for Arizona State, whether it's Taylor Kelly or whether it's Michael Bercovici, they are going to put up points. I think DJ Foster is one of the more versatile players out there. I really think a lot about his game. And then you look at their wide receiver, Jalen Strong. He absolutely ate the Trojans up last year in that game. You kind of talked about it a little bit. What are your initial thoughts heading into this matchup?
I guess I'll start, and I'll just say this. I mean, when I watched that game, and I did watch the UCLA game last week, you know, what I saw was similar to what you said, Gary. That game was not as out of control as it ended up getting at the end of the day. But, you know, UCLA made plays largely because of Brett Hundley, and that opened up and exploded the game, you know, sort of out of control for them, you know, as much. And when I say because of Brett Hundley, it wasn't that he just made great throws. It was his ability to keep plays alive, run for first downs, all those things that Cody Kessler's not going to do. As much as I love Cody, he's not going to do those things. And on the flip hand side of the ball, you know, their defense, ASU's defense, just really has dropped off, and they're starting a lot of young players from where it was a year ago. So I think you're absolutely right. I think Berkovich is still sort of finding his way, but came through a nice big game. If he plays this coming Saturday, I think he'll be dramatically more prepared than he was, you know, facing the big national spotlight that he was a week ago. But their offense can score points. Jalen Strong, to me, is the best wide, no disrespect to Nelson Agholor, I think he's the best wide receiver in the Pac-12. And I think he was one of the two best wide receivers in the Pac-12 last year. I think he's going to be a big-time NFL player. I think he's going to be the best test that Dory Jackson and all the other guys in our secondary get. They are going to throw the ball all over the place. Even in the loss last week to UCLA, they had almost 500 yards passing.
Yeah.
They are going to test our defensive backs like they haven't been tested. And we're going to have to score points on offense, get the running game going, and, you know, put those long running game drives together to keep their offense off the field.
Well, I want to emphasize a point. You know, you talked about that game wasn't as out of hand as the score would indicate at the end. What did the Hail Mary do for USC last week against Oregon State? And if you think about Arizona State, you throw a pick six going in at half, I thought it turned the whole game around on there. I thought it took the confidence away from their offense, from their quarterback in particular. So, you know, that Arizona State team is something that should very much concern USC. And here's the situation. You've got a running back. Gary, you said it. So versatile. Now, this is a guy that can run between the tackles. He can run outside the tackles. Very good catch of the ball out of the backfield. So, to me, the challenge is going to be to try to deal with DJ Foster, which is really kind of different than anything the Trojans have had to deal with defensively up to this point.
And I was kind of impressed, too. You know, I love DJ, but they also showed a couple other running backs, the freshman kid from Colorado, Gamage, something like that, and then DeMario Richard, another guy. So they got weapons, no doubt about it. One thing that I think is going to be interesting, and I would love to get your guys' thoughts on it, you know, they put up a whole bunch of plays last week. I think they tied USC for, you know, 105 plays, something in that regard. It's going to be a hot afternoon. Mid-90s is the forecast. Both teams are going to be going up and down the field. Just any thoughts on how that could play out?
I do think that it's probably in USC's best interest to, as much as we want to play fast and have a lot of plays, you know, use that running game the way that we did in the fourth quarter against Oregon State to sort of, I hate to say ball control, but keep our offense on the field and wear down the ASU defense and just continue to make plays, take advantage of the possessions we have by scoring touchdowns, not field goals, and certainly not punts, and try to dominate the possessions that we have and count on the fact that ASU, their defense is young, and we're going to be able to put up points, and count on the fact that USC's defense, hopefully, you know, as talented as we are on defense, you know, are going to play better against this spread team and in the course of a game make some plays, get some stops, create some turnovers, make some big negative plays that, to me, becomes the difference in the game. I think both offenses will play well. I hope our offensive line plays, you know, better. But I think the USC defense has to be the difference in this game.
Yeah, every time I think about the Trojan defense, all I can think of is I hope Tyler Murphy doesn't show up, and I hope that option's not going to be a part of it. And I think that you couldn't have two quarterbacks that are more different, you know, back to back. And the fact that you got Sean Mannion, who's a guy who's not very mobile, wants to sit in the pocket, and then, you know, going back to Tyler Murphy and what he does. You know, this is kind of a hybrid of that with, you know, what you're going to see. And I don't know that Justin Wilcox knows what he's going to see from them offensively. There's a lot of things, a lot of potential. But to get back to your point, Gary, you know, the heat affects both sides, and I don't think it's fun to play in it whether you're visiting or whether you're there, and I don't know psychologically where it puts you at. I will go back, though, to your point about both these teams having run a lot of plays. Fresno State game for USC and having to run all those plays, if that didn't test where you were from a conditioning point of view, then nothing did. And I don't think Arizona State is ever going to have a problem with the heat. So I don't think it's going to be a big issue for either team.
Let me ask a quick thought about the USC passing game and the offense. You know, Cody Kessler's numbers, obviously, they are terrific. What, 72% and no interceptions. He's really doing a good job. I just can't help but have the feeling that there's still something more in the tank for the Trojan passing game, specifically downfield, specifically with Nelson Aguilar. You mentioned Jeremy, Jalen Stronger, Nelson Aguilar. You can both throw their names up there for the best guy. If you look downfield with the passing game, and I think one of the things that's going to be key is the emergence of a Janae Harris in that slot receiver role. If that can allow Nelson to move back out to the outside, which is his more natural position, I just can't help but think he's going to be able to do even more damage in the future than we've seen so far.
And I'll go back to one of Mike's comments, and I hate to always bring it back to the offensive line, but you just get the sense that there's still not a lot of faith that we're going to have time to throw downfield.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. And that, and that Cody's, as Mike said earlier, is not stepping up into throws. He's taking the underneath stuff, getting rid of the ball quickly. I don't know how much of that's being called in from the sidelines to sort of, here's your number one or two reads are going to be the short underneath opportunities, or whether or not it's Cody sort of checking and just getting out of things and getting the ball out quickly. But I couldn't agree with you more, Gary. I think it's sort of conspicuous to all of us that the one part that's missing is how are we not using the weapons we have from a athleticism standpoint at the wide receiver and even the tight end position and throwing the ball down the field and taking some shots and sort of backing up that defense. And Todd Graham's defense is going to, be blitzing all over the place, coming after this young offensive line, trying to do a lot of what Boston College did to confuse the young offensive line and get all over Cody Kessler. How do we use the deep passing game to potentially back them up a little bit and then have that also help open up the running game? I think you've got to do it. It's been a missing ingredient that needs to return for this offense to really compete. And there will be a game, as much as I feel like I'm contradicting myself. I do think the USC defense is the strength of this team right now until that offensive line matures. But there will be a game that our offense needs to score points. It is going to need to score points for us to get a win. And, a game against a little bit of a young, porous defense like ASU might be a good opportunity for us to use all facets of our offense, including going down the field in the passing game.
Now, I know this is going to sound weird because different people look at the games differently. There are times that I look at Cody Kessler and I'm wondering to myself, what is he doing? Because I think that he's trying to push the ball downfield too much, two times, and I almost feel as though some receivers haven't come through for him. I'll take you back to the Oregon State game. There was a 2nd and 20, and it looked to me like he was trying to get all 20 back in one play. There have been a couple of 3rd downs when it's been 3rd and 7, and I've seen him throw the ball 20, 25 yards down the field. And there was one time I know Buck Allen, he tried to hit him on a wheel route where he's covered and the safety comes over the top. And I just thought to myself, you've only got to go 7 yards on that. So as good as Cody's numbers look, I think they're a little bit deceiving in that I think he's really caught up with trying to get the ball down the field. Jeremy and Gary, I don't disagree with your point. You want to do that and you want to try to stretch. But I don't know if it's there. And I'm not so sure that there aren't some other ways that he can manage this a little bit better. I would compare this with what's going on with the offensive line. Young guys trying to get it, trying to come through, and trying to make some catches. If that starts to transpire, then I think that there's really no limit to what he can do. But I'm concerned in about what those choices are. And, Jeremy, you made the point. You didn't know whether it was Cody that was the one that was calling for that or if it was coming from the sidelines. If you guys go back and look at it, you could scratch your head at some of the times that he goes down the field when he really only needs 6 or 7 yards.
Okay, and let's flip it over and talk just about the conference right now. This is going to be the first Pac-12 South matchup. for the Trojans. We are 2-0 in conference play, which is nice. But this is where things are going to get interesting. I think this next stretch of ASU at home and then Arizona on the road, boy, you better have your defensive moxie ready to go against these two head coaches, because they're going to throw a lot at you. And I think this is going to be real important to see where this goes in the Pac-12 South. How do you guys see things shaping up right now after we've had a couple weeks to kind of see the other teams and how everyone's playing?
I personally think you hate to say must-win game. I mean, USC is undefeated in conference right now, and if they don't beat ASU, certainly, you know, if they ran the table, they'd still be in it. But you just get the sense that you're going to need to win your home games, and you're going to need to win your home games against teams that don't have great defenses. And right now, ASU's defense looks fairly young. You know, they graduate. Will Sutton, Bradford, all the guys they had last year are now, you know, gone in a way. They need to take advantage of this game on Saturday, get a win, and position themselves, because going on the road to Arizona, going on the road to Utah, you know, on the road at the end of the season to UCLA, they've got their big tests ahead. This one, to me, is one that they've got to have, you know, whether it's called must-win or whatever it might be. Obviously, for ASU, it's absolutely must-win for them. So they've now got their, you know, Pac-12 South loss. They lose this one, and they're pretty much, you know, done, in my mind. I think
which they did not expect.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think USC better, you know, bring everything they got, because definitely Todd Graham and his team are going to bring everything they got to fight to keep in it.
Well, and it's a tough defense that you're going to have to face. It's really going to test what USC is going to do. But to your point, Jeremy, the Pac-12, top to bottom, it's just really, where's the easy out anymore? And I don't know that there is one. And the top keeps getting better. This is a conference that you're going to start talking about, like, it can rival what's recognized as the best conference in the country, and especially at the bottom half of it. So, you know, it comes down to coaching, and you know, where's that coach in the Pac-12? I can't find
there isn't one.
There isn't one. So, you know, if you can get through this, and somehow, you know, it's like the SEC, you know, talk about, well, can, you know, two SEC teams, you know, could they have played in the championship? You're like, yeah, well, if there were two one-loss teams, sure, that's the case. Now there's going to be four teams at the end of the year. Do you want to have a loss in conference? Probably not. Are you going to have to, you know, fight to get into the conference championship? Yeah, you are. Can you afford to lose this game? No, because like Jeremy said, you've got UCLA. Is that going to be easy? No. At Arizona, is that going to be easy? Now, Washington State, is that fun? Come on. So, you know, it's critical. It's critical. Every Pac-12 game is going to be critical for USC.
It makes it for an awfully interesting one. I think this is going to be, you know, we all expect a shootout, I think, on Saturday. Who knows? But, you know, like you kind of made the point earlier, Arizona State always seems to give a tough game to the Trojans, and I expect nothing less on Saturday. Should be a lot of fun. For Mike Lamb and Jeremy Hogue, this is Gary Paskowitz. You're listening to the We Are SC podcast.